sleep. The beat.
Well, finally, hello everyone, girls and gays. Welcome to Rate to Gay Pre-Create. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
And we are back for episode 7. Hey, Logan. You know how critics are always saying that New York isn't just a place, it's like a character.
I have heard that once or twice from critics.
Yeah, well, today we're going to celebrate that living, breathing quality of the greatest city in the world, New York City, baby.
New York City. Wow, excuse me. I'm nursing a cough. I just got over a sinus infection, so we may need to edit some coughs out.
Not COVID related.
Not COVID, thank you.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, but I'm super excited to talk about two New York musicals today. Especially, I have now lived in New York for almost 3.5 years.
So, do you think you can relate to the characters in these musicals?
I think I now am a New Yorker 100% and can relate to anything about any art about New York 100%.
Every single one, baby. Gangs of New York, let me at it. Anyway, so just to explain a little bit about what Rate, Debate, Recreate is for all you newcomers. Each week, Logan and I will be picking a musical and rating that musical on a scale of 1 to 10, debating which one is better, and then thinking of one aspect we would change and recreating that aspect. Because, as you know, we're the experts in musical theater. Step aside, everyone else. We know best.
We do.
Yeah. And each week we have a category, and if you haven't picked up on it yet, this week that category is New York, New York, and my show is Company.
And my show is Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Excellent. I'm excited.
Me too. These are two amazing shows. I love both of them.
I know. I'm ready to just like wax poetic about Raul Sparsa for an hour.
Same. I got my water, got my White Claw. I'm ready.
Ready to go. Red wine. Raul Sparsa demands red wine. Thank you very much. He's a sophisticated guy. Okay. So to get started, we're just going to each go through a little summary of each show, just recap a bit. So I'll start with Company. That's okay. Okay, here we go. Company is a concept musical that follows the main character, Bobby. It's in New York City, baby. He's single. It's his birthday. He's afraid of commitment. Quite a catch. But he has all these married friends, and the show is just a series of conversations between him and his married friends about marriage and about love and what it means to be married and be in love. So each of the little couples kind of has a little quirk that is showcased throughout the show. So we've got Sarah and Harry, who are very competitive with each other. They literally do karate on stage. It's staged quite funnily in the Raul Sparsa version. It's pretty good. We got Peter and Susan, who are getting divorced, but are really happy about it. It's the happiest they've ever been. Then we've got Jenny and David, and Jenny's kind of uptight. David wishes she was less so, but he goes along with it. Their whole thing is compromise, kind of in a gendered form, but whatever. And we got Paul and Amy, who have been living together forever and are about to get married, but she's super anxious about it. We got Larry and Joanne. Joanne's much older than Larry, I think. Maybe actually not. They might be the same age. But they're like the oldest out of his friends. And she's on her third marriage. She's quite mean to Larry. but she's pretty open also about her like extramarital affairs. She like hits on Bobby at some point. It's kind of weird. He stays with her because he is afraid. Larry is afraid. If he left her, he would regret it. His father left his mother. It's a big daddy issues thing. All right, and then we have the rest of the characters are three female characters who are kind of function as Bobby's love interest. So you've got Kathy. She and Bobby dated. They both wanted to get married, never told each other, just ships passing in the night kind of stuff. And then you got April, who's a stewardess and just a lovable little oddball. The actress who plays her in the Raul Sparsa version is very funny. And then we've got Marta, who I don't want to say she's like the wild child of the bunch, but she's definitely like the free spirit of the bunch, and she's the only one who speaks to anything outside of their kind of waspy existence. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and rate Company. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 Leanies Who Lunch.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Excited to talk about Company. I will, excuse me, give a quick synopsis of Thoroughly Modern Millie. So, Thoroughly Modern Millie is a musical that came out in 2002 with music by Janine Tesori, my queen, who we have talked about once before. We will talk about at least once again, probably more.
Hell yeah.
Yes, she wrote Shrek as well. Anyway, it's based off of the 1967 film Thoroughly Modern Millie, which actually takes place in 1922. And follows our protagonist, Millie Dilmount, who moves from her small town in Kansas, I believe, to New York City. So her whole thing is that she wants to be a modern woman of the 20s. And that includes her marrying rich and living her flapper girl lifestyle. Excuse me, taking some breathing breaks here. Anyway, her dream doesn't work out quite as planned. She pretty much goes broke immediately, like the day she moves to New York, and ends up checking into a hotel for struggling actresses. This hotel is run by Mrs. Mears, who is a white woman and failed actress who is masquerading as an Asian woman, and she is selling actresses into a slavery ring in China. Yes,
yay.
That is correct. Yike is also
big
correct.
Yike.
Anyways, Millie meets her love interest, Jimmy, although her first love interest is her boss, Trevor Graydon, who she works as a stenographer under. She also befriends the wealthy Dorothy Parker, who is wanting to know what it's like to live a poorer life because she grew up in such wealth. Mrs. Mears employs two kind of henchmen who are Chinese immigrants, actual Chinese folks, and they're doing everything for her kind of in the hopes of being reunited with her mother, which she dangles over their head. Ultimately, all of their paths collide, including that of a wonderful, renowned New York jazz singer named Muzzy. And I won't spoil the exact ending, but the story wraps up in a really cool and funny way, and you just get all these little couplets and justice is served, I'll say. I'm going to rate Thoroughly Modern Millie 9 out of 10 Fat Boys Famous Arrows.
Awesome. Great. That's a good rating system. I am going to rate Millie. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10, Fat Boys Famous Arrows.
And I'm going to give Company also 8 out of 10, Ladies Who Lunch, just like you.
Good. I thought about changing it to Dinosaurs Surviving the Crunch. It's like one of my favorite lines in the history of all time. awesome. Should we get into this discussion bit? Do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. And what I want to start with actually is the racism component of this show, because I have a lot of mixed feelings, actually. I think that prior to rewatching Millie for this podcast, I was like kind of nervous that the show was maybe worse than it actually is. That being said, there are definitely some elements of this that are like pretty not great, pretty problematic.
Yeah.
And like, first off, I think it needs to be acknowledged that the source material that this draws from is extremely racist and problematic. Mm-hmm. The musical does make strides, I think, in a really, really good direction. I think that some things linger from the original production, which I'm going to talk about more at the end during my recreate section, which I'm excited for. It's kind of my first more serious criticism recreate section that I'll be giving.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, so some of the elements of this that I think need to be discussed are the characters of Mrs. Mears and Bung Fu and Ching Ho. Mrs. Mears is, as I said, a failed actress and a white woman who's yellow-faced, literally, as an Asian woman. The thing that's really interesting about this is that she is supposed to be, like, this caricature. And she's, like, you're not supposed to be looking at her and being like, that's an Asian woman. You're being like, this is a dumb white woman trying to trick people into thinking she's Chinese. And like the whole time, like Bun Fu and Ching Ho are literally like, is this what she thinks of Chinese people? Like, what the fuck? She's so dumb. So I do think that they do a good job of letting the audience in on that to an extent. I'll argue that they should do a much, much more overt version of that. But I did read a lot about the controversy and non-controversy around this show. One of the things I listened to in prep was actually a podcast that the authors or the writers, so Dick Scanlon and then Janine Tesori and a couple others were interviewed about the racism in Millie. And this is one of the quotes from Dick, the writer of the show. He says, I think the script states clearly, and if it doesn't, I'm stating it clearly here, that in no way are their performances meant to be exaggerated, too lampooned, made fun of, nada. The actors should approach their roles no differently than the actress playing Millie approaches hers, with truth, integrity, imagination, and intentionality. So I really do think that a big part of this show is really depends on the direction and how the director is characterizing these people. I also know that the actors who played Ching Ho and Bun Fu were pretty involved in the creation of the musical. And one of the quotes from one of the characters or actors, Francis, he says, how do you debunk racism without representing racism? So I do think that there is an argument to be made that Miss Mears is clearly the villain. She's clearly portrayed as this delusional woman who's like, being extremely racist and literally committing human trafficking. Like, it's pretty overt in that way. I do think that there it can be made a lot more clear. And I'll argue that at the end. So, yeah, I just wanted to start with that. I don't think that this show is, like, beyond repair. I don't think it needs to be, like, canceled or anything. I do think that as our shared, like, cultural understanding continues to grow, I think that this show can definitely benefit from updating in certain ways. Those are kind of my thoughts on the racism that I just wanted to start off at the forefront of this episode with.
No, I think that's good. I think I agree. I don't think it's like a show. It's obviously, I don't know. I don't think it's beyond repair either, but I do think like there's a certain, and I don't know when this, I don't know. I'm like, speaking to like yellow face and black face and those types of like portrayals specifically, I do feel like there is some sort of a trend, particularly among like white creators, to try to use it as like commentary, but in a way that's like, oh, haha, aren't we so like, we know this is bad, like wink, wink, like everyone watching knows this is bad. And I think like it's honestly
at Tina Fey.
At Tina Fey happens all the time. But I honestly just think it's like kind of lazy at this point. Like, yes, we fucking know. Like, yes, we fucking know it's bad. Like, it's not. I think there must be like some smarter way. You can like portray a racist without her like posing as an Asian woman.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
Like, so I just think like that's always kind of like tough for me. I think like it just like doesn't really have much of a place in comedy anymore.
Yeah, I think that on one hand, I absolutely think, like, first of all, when we're talking about representation on Broadway, like, that's, I think it would also be a different story if there were, like, an abundance of shows with Asian American, or not Asian American, Asian, like, roles, East Asian, South Asian, like, all different cultures, and there's all these different types of roles for those people, and that's not, like, impeding with a caricature of like a racist person, but that's not the case. Like, what are your roles out there on Broadway? Like Miss Saigon, which has its problems, like in a very similar way. And then what? Like, there's nothing really out there. So
The King and I.
Yeah, The King and I, which again, like
has its problems.
has its problems. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, it is really disappointing to see, because you're not like you're not afforded the same level of representation on the stage that exists in reality. And yeah, when the characters that are representing your culture are caricatures of it, that's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of it, and I was thinking about this because I was researching for another future podcast episode, and I think this happens quite a bit, is like, you'll get like middle school or high school productions of like Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yes.
Or like Aida or Rent. And they have absolutely, it's like all white kids. Like, you can't do these shows with all white children. You just can't. Like, and it's, and I think like a lot of the conversation around, because Thoroughly Modern Millie is like such, it's a good show for like younger kids to do.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Like, it's not particularly inappropriate and like a lot of, in like a sexual way, or like there's not a ton of like bad language, if I remember correctly. Like, it's a pretty tame show. It's like a good show for like 13-year-olds. But not if you can't like accurately cast, especially like the roles of the two like quote unquote henchmen.
Yes.
Like, if you can't accurately, you can't cast like white kids in those roles. And I think like a lot of musicals like that, and like, for example, like I said, like maybe they don't do Rent in high schools, but they certainly do it in colleges where they don't have enough.
My boyfriend did Rent in high school.
Are you
and the person that played Angel called him a faggot.
I don't know if we have time to unpack that right
We
now.
Don't.
Oh,
just
my
had
God.
To share.
Oh my God. Wow. Anyway, like, I don't know. I think there was talk of doing Rent at Vanderbilt while we were there, I think. And it's like, we certainly do not have a diverse enough like theater group. Theater like community at Vanderbilt to do Rent. Like, it just absolutely shouldn't be talked about. And I think that a lot of pushback against shows like this comes from like a bunch of white people.
Yeah, from everything. The productions like, that aren't like yeah. giving it its due diligence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just sucks. But I agree. I think I take issue with it a little more. But I don't think it's beyond repair at all. And I'm excited to hear you recreate.
Thank you.
But speaking of upper middle class white people, let's move on to Company a little bit. So I just want to talk a little bit about the history of the show, because we did talk. So we talked about West Side Story previously and how Stephen Sondheim said himself that he shouldn't write stories about Puerto Rican people because he doesn't know any Puerto Rican people. And I think that is an accurate comment on his part. He did it anyway. We already talked about that. Anyway, he has a really great quote about Company. And honestly, like, on the flip side of that coin, he's like the perfect person to write Company.
Mm-hmm.
But this quote, so I just found this on Wikipedia and kind of talking about his reasoning behind making Company and why they made it the way they did. So it goes, Broadway theater has been for many years supported by upper middle class people with upper middle class problems. These people really want to escape that world when they go to the theater. And then here we are with Company talking about how we're going to bring it back right in their faces. And I really like that, because I do think, I mean, Company is definitely like super waspy and a great example of like another piece of media about New York that only features white people, because I guess only white people live in New York. I don't know if you can tell me you live there.
I can say that's 100,000% not true.
I figured. But anyway, I like the fact that I do think Company is like a particularly, if a little, it's a good, if a little dated critique on like what marriage is to a particular group of people. And that's why I like it so much. I think it's like, it's kind of poking fun at these people while also lending them some empathy. And I think like Sondheim is particularly good at that. Anyway, I really like it. So the musical was a huge hit. It was Sondheim's first huge hit. So, and it was his first huge hit on his own, I should say. So he'd like written lyrics for established composers like Richard Rodgers and Leonard Bernstein, of course. And he had written his own music and lyrics before. It was a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, and Anyone Can Whistle, but neither one of those were particularly huge hits at the time. So this was his first big, like, commercial hit. It was nominated for 12 Tonys, won 6, including Best Musical, Best Score, Best Book, all that, Best Lyrics, all that good stuff. Now I want to move on. I really want to talk about Raul Esparza, because this is now a Raul Esparza stan
pod.
He is a perfect little cinnamon roll. I love him so much. He's just like, he has such a warmth to him that I think is like essential to make this character even like the least bit. I mean, you have to be charming and smarmy, but you also have to be likable. And charming and smarmy don't necessarily lend themselves to likable. And if you're going to end the show the way they do, which is with him, like, singing Being Alive and deciding that he wants to find love, which, listen, Being Alive is a fucking incredible song. I do think the ending of this musical is a bit too upbeat for what happens throughout. But if you're going to do that, like, Raul Esparza has to, like, exude a certain type of warmth. And I think he really does. And he was robbed of this fucking Tony. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, he won the Drama Desk Award that year. It was 2007. He lost to David Hyde Pierce, who's Niles Crane. Shouts to Fraser Heads out there. I really love David Hyde Pierce, but, like, I haven't seen Curtains, which is what he won for.
I love Curtains. Having...
Okay, well, maybe you can write for David Hyde Pierce in this conversation.
No, I'm still Team Raul.
Oh, but and having watched that version of Company like multiple times, I'm just floored that he didn't sweep up. I know you like watched it and you hadn't seen it before, right?
Yeah, I watched it for the first time recently.
Yeah, what did you think?
Loved it. Yeah, he is absolutely phenomenal. I'd also seen the Neil Patrick Harris version, and I think he is also great, but damn, does Raul bring like a whole fucking dimension vocally and acting wise to this character. Being Alive is one of my all-time favorite songs in musical theater. And he slays it to the max.
Yeah, it's just so he's like, and I've described so many actors like this recently, I feel like he's like an open, at the end he's like an open wound, but in a good way. Like, you, there's just, like, absolutely no way you can't feel all of that emotion just, like, pouring out of his, like, big open mouth as he screams the last note. And having been so, like, effortlessly charming, and I think he really does a great job at the beginning of, like, kind of playing up the schmooze and, like, the walls that the character has up, like, throughout the beginning. And then, like, he just, like, lets his, like, wall be, like, slowly chipped away at until it's, like, all vulnerability, like almost to the point where it's uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah,
and like I think he's so good. And on that same note, all the people in this version are like fucking wildly talented. And so if you haven't seen this version, it's on YouTube, you can go watch it. It's the 2006 revival. It's so fucking wonderful. And in the version, so the people in the pit are on stage acting, so all of the actors are playing instruments. So just like in general, these people are just like creme de la creme, wonderfully talented human beings. And I particularly want to point out Heather Laws, who plays Amy, sings Not Getting Married Today, which is just another straight banger. So she really stuck out to me. Her comic timing is just like incredible. The amount of like neuroticism and anxiety, which again, Sondheim is really good at. And the anxiety in particular, I really relate to. She's just able to project that in every line. Like in Getting Married Today, she does this thing where she, after the bless this day, every time they do that, she like runs and screams and hides. And, but she's so almost like reserved in her movements. It's very, very funny to watch. Like she has such a like restrained, anxious nature. I just think like she's absolutely incredible. She plays French horn, flute, and trumpet as well, so she's just like out of this world fucking talented. Everyone else is too. Like I just like harp on her because she always sticks out to me when I watch it. But Barbara Walsh plays Joanne. She's fucking great. She just plays the triangle sometimes, like fucking flex. I just think like I've seen like a lot of shows, like both like watch them on YouTube or wherever I can and like seeing some live, and I think this is one of the most like incredibly talented group of people that I've ever like watched in a show.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm on board. I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I just, the only, and why I dock 2 points, because I know I've, like, really harped on how much I like this show, but why I dock 2 points, I think, is I just think the musical is so cynical about marriage, like, all the way through. Like, none of these people are really happy together. The people that are happy together are divorced. And I have a hard time believing that, like, and Raul's person does a great job. I just think, like, by the book, I have a hard time believing that this guy has any real concept of, like, what it actually means to be married. And I think, like, a lot of that probably has to do, like, Sondheim, and I, oh God, I'm, let me pause while I remember this guy's name.
Yeah, it's
yeah, George Firth. Yeah. So they, a lot of that probably has to do, so both of them were, like, closeted gay men at the time. And obviously, like, couldn't get married. So it makes sense that they'd have, like, quite a cynical approach to it. And I think it also makes sense that there'd be kind of a longing at the end.
Yeah.
I just, yeah, I guess I just wish, I wish there was, it was all, like, more interspersed throughout. Because I think the, everything up until, like, Marry Me a Little is so fucking cynical.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's like, how does Bobby watch all that and then leave with this super positive, right? Like,
yeah, it's, he gonna just be watches okay. Like, he watches Joanne, like, rip on Larry right in front of him and is just like, yeah, it's what I want. I don't know. And obviously, like, there's a lot of nuance in that. Like, it's not as simple as all that, but it's just, I think I wish there's just a little more of the longing interspersed with the cynicalness of it all to make the ending, I think, to earn, like, the hopeful ending that it has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's mostly what I got.
Okay. I can move on to Millie. So, okay. First, this is just a note that I noticed. So Sutton Foster obviously plays Thoroughly Modern Millie. This was definitely, like, her break. It wasn't her Broadway debut. She was in a few shows before, but to my knowledge, I think most or all of them were, like, she wasn't starting a role, for example. She was, like, on a tour and then eventually got the Broadway version. She was an understudy. So this was definitely her big break, was Thoroughly Modern Millie. And because of that, when I watched this, it was just crazy to me because Millie has this pretty iconic entrance into the show where she walks with her two bags and sets them down. It's just like a, and she's just like looking out into the skyline. And so
QNYC.
Yeah, literally, which Sutton Foster sang on Broadway.
Of course.
Anyway, Sutton Foster comes out and, like, puts down her bags, has a super iconic entrance, and then there's just, like, nothing from the audience. Like, it's just so hard for me to imagine a world where Sutton Foster comes out in an iconic entrance and they don't have to, like, write in a musical break because they know that the crowd is going to be screaming for 5 minutes.
That's so weird. Because I feel, I like,
know,
the entrance is so iconic. People should still scream. Like, I've seen, right, Wicked on tours with, like, not famous people, and people lose their shit when Elphaba walks out, like, no matter, yeah, who she is.
Yeah, maybe that was just the bootleg that I watched. But
shitty,
yeah,
audience.
It was crazy to me. I think that Janine Tesori is the queen of wit, and I think some of her lyrics in general are amazing, but in this show has some of my faves. In the opening number, there's this lyric, what we think is chic, unique, and quite adorable, they think is odd and Sodom and Gomorrable. Like, yeah, I think they do such a good job of, like, portraying what it means to be a flapper girl, like, not in reality, but what the, like, the vision of that is for Millie, and why she's so into it. Yeah, also in Thoroughly Modern Millie, there's this part at the end where they're, like, they sing goodbye, good goody girl, and there's this string of kicks that they all do that's just amazing. Yeah, overall, I think that this show is so fun. I know earlier we were talking about how this is, like, kind of one of those shows that's really friendly to high schools or middle school type ages, and I think It definitely falls into that category of like anything goes, just like classic to the max theater, where it's just like big tap, big group numbers, big songs. And of that subgenre of musicals, this has to be like maybe my favorite. A big part of that is the music. Like you will see on my bop list, there's pretty much not a single miss in this show. And Sutton Foster just like destroys the role of Millie DeMott and wins a Tony from it. I guess I'm just gonna go through the show and give some of my highlights that are in there.
Okay.
Dorothy as a character is so sweet, so innocent. It's hard, I feel like, to empathize with a really wealthy person that's willingly want to be poor, and somehow you still kind of do with Dorothy. I love the song How the Other Half Lives. It's such a great, like, singing two different melodies that match up at the same time, kind of like For Good from Wicked kind of song. And then we have what I believe to be an iconic song to the max, which is The Speed Test. This is sung by Trevor Graydon, who is Millie's
Yes.
boss. And at the time, this is Millie kind of like applying for this job and kind of proving herself. So he's basically reading off something to her that she needs to be transcribing and to see if she can like be a quick enough stenographer for him. So the whole song is like just sung so quickly. It's hilarious. There's tap dancing. It's a great time all around. On the topic of tap dancing, I feel like kind of a trend in, I don't know, like post 2000s, maybe musicals, is kind of like disguising or having a reason for tap to come up. In the beginning of theater, it's like everyone went for just the big tap and the big everything. And I love that also. But I think that now there's like kind of a need to be like, well, why are they tapping?
Yeah.
And the reason in Millie is that they're stenographers. So their tapping is literally like they're typewriting. I think that's one of the
Yeah.
most genius uses of tap in a musical. Yes. Also, we have Gavin Creel who plays Jimmy.
Oh,
This is
the love of
also
my
a Gavin
life.
Creel stan pod.
Oh, for sure.
He has the voice of a fucking angel, the
Wow.
looks of the same. And yeah, he's kind of like a bad boy and takes Millie to a prohibition bar, and there's this drinking choreography that just like takes you away. They do
I'll
such a
eat it
good
up.
job, I think, of staging the show in a way that's like, I know we talked about how West Side Story uses choreo as like part of what advances the plot. And I think that this show does that as well, really
Sure,
well.
yeah.
Yeah, I think Jimmy, the character that Gavin Creel plays, is simultaneously really funny, but also like really raw and has some really like good and deep moments. We have like a quartet in this show between Dorothy, Trevor, Millie, and Jimmy. That's beautiful. It's like such a beautiful number. And they're all kind of like singing about how they've fallen in love with this person and are kind of coming to terms with it. It's called I Turn the Corner slash I'm Falling in Love. Yeah, and then Gimme Gimme, kind of like the 11 o'clock number, not kind of, the 11 o'clock number of this show, where Sutton Foster belts her heart out, the vibrato of it all. That's how you
Oh my
win a
God.
motherfucking Tony.
Masterclass.
Yeah. Oh my God, sorry. I'm trying so hard not to cough.
Know, you keep like pushing yourself up
I
in your chair
know.
and you're just like, don't do it.
Whew.
Bitch, don't do it. Oh my God. It's okay. Yeah. I think you're right about the tapping in it, especially like the great West Side Story. That integration is all there, to use a term. But yeah, it's just, there's like a, and I don't know, I personally don't think you ever really need a reason to tap. You
Agreed,
can just do it.
100%.
Like in your regular life, please break out into tap dances. But it is quite clever, and I do appreciate that. I think it's for all of its like kind of There are definitely, as far as like the race stuff, maybe some broad generalizations, but there are really clever parts of it.
I think so.
I think I said most of what I wanted to say about Company besides the BAP list. I did want to point out some really funny lines that I love. Like, this show is like quite funnier than I remembered it being. This line is not that funny, but I say it a lot. It's Bobby when he was talking about Kathy. He goes, "You remember Kathy? Well, she's the best. I'm talking the best." I don't know. He's just, the way he says, "I'm talking the best." I say that a lot. So, usually to myself, because I know no one around me will understand. But there's a pretty, it's kind of bad, but I think it's Amy. She says that dumb hairdresser curled my hair like he was on withdrawal.
Oh my God.
And then again, Amy, she's like really on fire. There's a really long conversation which Paul is basically just like convincing her to get married. She's like, "I don't want to." And he's like, "No, we're going to be fine. Just get married." And she says, "Paul, it's embarrassing. People will think I'm pregnant." And then she like says something about how he's like too nice, and he like thanks her. One time he thanked her for like bringing him a drink, and she goes, "You don't thank someone for warm orange juice, Paul." She's really just on like a roll the whole time. Like she's just so funny. Like, no human can stand all that everlasting affection. Like, and it's true. Like, I'll get to this in my recreate, which I guess I'll save it for then. But I don't think like Amy and Paul really should end up together either. I think that part's a little sanitized.
Yeah.
And kind of like romanticized romantic comedy in a way. But I'll just go through the BOP list really quick. The Stephen Sondheim BOP list, if you will. So we start with Company. I think that's a great song. Sorry, Grateful, sad BOP. And I remember, like, I don't know about you, but the first time I heard this song, I was like, wow, this is so romantic. And now I listen to it, and I'm like, this is so fucking sad. Like, is this what's waiting for me when I get married to someone? Like, hot damn. All right. Someone Is Waiting, I also really like, and Raul like sings the shit out of it. So beautiful, nice and high. We got Another 100 People, who I haven't touched on Marta very much, but the actress who plays her in this version is like fucking incredible. She's really, really great, and she kills Another 100 People, which is a horribly hard song that I had to sing once on stage with a like 100 degree fever.
And still killed it.
That's debatable, but we'll move on. We got Getting Married Today, which we already talked about. Great song. Marry Me a Little. Side by side by side by side / What Will We Do Without You. I think that's a really great scene as well. Everyone, like, when they're kind of pairing off in couples, they play their little instruments together. And, of course, Raul Esparza has no one to play with. It's very sad. The Ladies Who Lunch, just absolutely iconic. It was Elaine Stritch, I believe, who sang it back in the day. Just absolutely iconic. And then, of course, Being Alive, which I think we agree is, like, just one of the best, hands down.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right? That's what I got.
Awesome. So I just have a BOP list as well left. Overture. This is an Overture BOP. Rare, but real.
Overture BOP.
Not For the Life of Me. Fairly Modern Millie. Not For the Life of Me, Reprise. How the Other Half Lives. Not For the Life of Me, Reprise Again. This time it's sung by Ching Ho and Bun Fu in Cantonese. And it's really funny because their story actually mirrors Millie's arc a lot. So much so that they sing her I Want song. The Speed Test. They Don't Know. The Nutty Cracker Suite. What Do I Need with Love? Only in New York, Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy.
Forget About the Boy, Ah, Sweet Mystery of Life, I Turn the Corner, / I'm Falling in Love, Muchin, Long As I'm Here with You, Gimme, Gimme, and the finale. Yes, that is all the songs except for a couple of transitional instrumental scenes.
Wow, that's a good one. I love it. I feel like every time we ask for a pop list, Logan's just like the entire
thing. The whole thing.
The entire thing. All right. Well, should we move on to the recreate section. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll let you go last. Mine is more serious than usual as well. But yeah, I'll go first. Okay. So as we talked about, Company was kind of conceptualized as this musical about contemporary relationships, but it was obviously made in the 1970s. So some things in the musical are a little dated in the 21st century. So I'll just touch on a few of those things. So it's, again, as we said, very waspy. It's a version of New York where Marta is the only person of color. And I don't even know if she's, like, written that way or if that's just the way they cast it. But she's, like, the only person who, like, recognizes that there is life outside of this, like, very wealthy white bubble. The other thing is the couples are very hetero. So Peter hints that he might be bi slash open to experimenting at some point. But it's very, very short. And Bobby, like, it's, like, framed in a way that he, like, makes a pass at Bobby, which, like, everyone makes a pass at Bobby at some point in the show. But Bobby then kind of goes, like, oh, haha, like, you almost got me there. And then Peter's like, oh, yeah, ha-ha-ha, like, I was totally joking. And it's very short, kind of weird. I think, like, in the 21st century, in 2020, there is an opportunity to explore, like, outside of that. So again, it was like very revolutionary at the time it was written. Two closeted at the time, gay men wrote it, and I think like that context allows them to be very critical of heterosexual marriage. But I think we can still update that today. So I wanted to try and reconfigure the characters to update the story. So there have been some gender swap versions, but I wanted to kind of go beyond that. So the gender swap versions, there was a 2018 West End revival. And then there was the 2020 Broadway revival, but of course, COVID got in the way. So, yeah, not great. But I would love to see that kind of in the future. So the characters who are gender swapped are Bobby becomes Bobby with an IE because that makes it a girl's name. And Amy becomes Jamie. April becomes Andy, Marta becomes PJ, Kathy becomes Theo.
Is that April becomes Andy a Parks and Rec reference they made?
Oh, I don't know, maybe. I didn't think about that. But yeah, so those are the only people that they like switch their genders. So I'm just going to go through the couples and talk about like how I think those couples could be updated. So here we go. So we've got Sarah and Harry. So these two are overly competitive with each other, which I think is like a fair problem to have in a relationship. And often like times those types of people are drawn to each other. But they're competitive in very gender specific ways. So he's constantly nagging her about her dieting. And in turn, she is constantly nagging him about his drinking. So I think it would be fun to take that competitive nature and make it about like work or something else gender neutral. Like maybe they met at work, maybe she's a doctor and he's a lawyer and they're like competitive about their jobs, or they work at the same place and they're competitive about it that way. And that I think can kind of get into more like interesting gender ideas rather than like you eat too much and I drink too much. Yeah. So we got Peter and Susan. So Peter and Susan are the couple that are happier after they get divorced, but they're still living together. I think exploring the merits of an open relationship is interesting because in the show they like don't really seem to have any plans to move out. So like maybe there's a throuple in our future. I don't know. We'll see. but in all seriousness, like I also think the queer aspects of the show could be handled not necessarily like more thoughtfully, but just like given a bigger role. So Peter is the one who kind of makes a pass at Bobby. So Peter like admits he's had relationships with men and then kind of hits on Bobby. So I think there's like an opportunity to explore that a little further and like with a little more depth, especially given the fact that they're getting divorced. So then we got Jenny and David. And I think this is the couple where Jenny is kind of uptight and David is not. And I think having the woman be the uptight person is a pretty gendered stereotype. But the idea of like sacrificing part of yourself for your partner, like part of your personality or something that you like for your partner, isn't like that's a pretty normal thing, I think, especially if you like you really love someone, just like thinking about what you need to compromise on. But I don't think that this couple needs to be like gender specific. So lesbian couple, gay couple. I think it'd be nice to have some diversity there.
Ginny and Davida.
Yeah.
Adding an A makes it a woman.
Oh, yeah. then we got Paul and Amy. So this is Paul and Amy, the ones who are about to get married, and then Amy doesn't want to. So I think, like, the idea that this storyline has to end in marriage is, like, just super dated. Like, no, it doesn't. I think that people, like, I don't know. Like, maybe there's an idea that, like, you've been with this person for so long, we have to get married. But, like, they just don't seem to fit, in my opinion. Like, they are the epitome of, like, this is the rom-com couple who are, like, forcing you to make them, like, to forcing you to believe that they, like, work together. And she's not wrong. Like, she's, like, he is almost sickeningly sweet, especially in contrast with her. She's very neurotic, very anxious. And I think, like, everyone who is unhappy in this musical stays together, and I think that's much less common now. So I would like to see these two not get married. Maybe break up. That'd be happy. We got Larry and Joanne. I kind of like them. They can stay the same. I like it. The only update I really had was we can change Ladies Who Lunch to The Bitches Who Brunch. That's my take.
Wow. I love that. Here's to The Bitches Who Brunch.
Here's to The Bitches Who Brunch. I am one of you. not for like a year, but hopefully we get back to that soon. And then we just got Bobby. So I think Bobby's story, and we touched on this a little bit, I think Bobby's story ending and a desire to get married is kind of dated. Like, human connection doesn't depend on marriage, right? And yeah. I think it is, and I know that's what the show is about, but maybe we wouldn't make a show about marriage in 2020. It would just be about connection. I don't know. Especially now. But I think, like, again, like, the ending of the show is a little bit sanitized, a little bit, like, neat in that way. So I'd like to see maybe a different outcome for Bobby, or a desire for a connection with someone that doesn't necessarily hinge on the idea of marriage, especially when he's watching all of these relationships fall apart around him. And then we got Kathy, Marta, and April. So this is my last kind of point. So those are the three love interests for Bobby. And the only job that we know that any of them has is April, and she's a stewardess. So I don't think any other job is mentioned. And that is, like, that's, like, a gendered job, to be a stewardess. Like, you think of a woman when you think of stewardess. So I'd like to know more about their lives. What do they do for a living? Are they a career woman? What are they doing? Yeah. That's it. That's my take.
I'm into that. I want Bobby to be queer.
Yeah, I would be great too.
I feel like Bobby just, like, fucks anything that walks.
Well, he also, in that, like, little tiny thing.
Yeah, he does, like, have, like,
have you ever done with a man? He's like, oh, maybe. Like, and it's like, oh, like, come on.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
I love that. Okay. I will get to my recreate section as well. So I usually feel like my recreates have been traditionally more of a joke. But
I mean, mine too.
yeah. But for this episode, I actually wanted to offer some genuine areas where I think Thoroughly Modern Millie could update its plot and continue to remove some of the racist aspects in the show that still linger from the original movie production. So before I start of giving my ideas, I just feel like it really needs to be said that the racism in this musical is directed towards East Asian communities, and I am not a part of that community, and I'm certainly not trying to speak on behalf of them. The ideas that I'm going to propose are some that I've gathered after watching the show with, like, a really critical lens that I gathered after reading a bunch of stuff on this show. And after watching it, I also read a lot of opinion pieces that discuss the issues in this show, the things it does well. That being said, I'm extremely open to criticism here. These are just literally some preliminary thoughts I had while I was smoking weed after watching a fucking bootleg version of Thoroughly Modern Billy and then Amazing. Getting into an internet hole afterwards.
Great.
So, this is my proposal. Three things I think the show can change to make this less problematic than it currently is show. I think that the first and most important thing is Mrs. Mears just like needs to be way more evil. like I know she is because literally she's trafficking humans, but she's still kind of like a comedic character in a way, despite the like atrocities she's committing. But I think that if we remove some of that and make her way more outwardly evil, we can still keep her source motivation of she was a failed actress, so this is like the role of a lifetime for her is making this, you know, cosplaying as a fucking other race to do something for your own gain. She can still have that backstory, but I think it just needs to be so much more overt that she is like fucking evil. The only time we really, really get the like dive into that is during her song They Don't Know, when that's when it's revealed to the audience like what's happening here. And she does a great job in that song, and I think it's good because you like learn a lot about her motivation and everything. But I don't know, I think that her character, if it's going to be like that, it needs to be way more overt. And an alternative is we could also just have a non-yellow face actress making this role, who just, like, I think we can even keep the plot of her terrorizing both the actresses and the two people who work for her, because that's also a very real dilemma, is immigrants getting roped into, like, really manipulative plots and schemes. So, yeah, that's my number one. Number two is I think that the storylines of Bun Fu and Ching Ho should be amended and elevated a lot more. They currently only have two songs in the show. One of them is a short reprise of Not for the Life of Me. And one of them is the song Muchin, which is like about their mom. I think that, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and spoil one of the endings. So if you don't want to know one of the endings, skip 15 seconds ahead or something, I don't know. But one, I can't remember who, but one of these two characters ends up with Dorothy as like a last minute switch up from Trevor Graydon. They like are kind of falling in love separately this whole time. And I love that ending, but it kind of comes out of nowhere. So I'm like, maybe we give them a more depth in a storyline by like actually giving some insight into that. And maybe the brother who's not the one falling for Dorothy has, it's also like kind of implied that the brother ends up with Trevor Graydon potentially, like in a gay way. Like he jumps into his arms and they like have this moment at the very end, right before the bows. So it's cute. But I'm like, I would love to get maybe another duet where one's talking about her love for Dorothy and the other about his sexuality or love for Trevor, something like that. But anything we can do to give them more of a storyline than like we have to complete this plot from this person because like it's the only way we'll see our mom again. Like I think we can allow them a lot more depth than they're currently given. The last thing is I think that their mother should be a fucking character in this show. She's such a central character to their motivations and why they do what they do, but we never see them get reunited. We never see them. We don't know what happens with them. And that's like kind of what like the main thing that we know about these two characters during the show. So I don't know if she should get a song at the end, if maybe there's the whole Muzzy storyline where Muzzy turns out to be like everyone's mom, basically. And I'm like, maybe that would be a funny moment for their mom to come and also be reunited. But maybe there's like another twist there. I don't know. I think there's a whole plethora of things that could happen. But I think that adding their mother as a character would also add more depth to the part that's already there, which is that she's their primary motivator. So I think that those three things, making Mrs. Mears a lot more evil and not in yellow face, amending and elevating Bun Fu and Ching Ho storylines, and then also inserting their mother into this show, that to me, I think allows you to keep a lot of the show the same. You don't have to like scrap it down and like start from scratch. You can keep a lot of it, but I think you can also make it just a more inclusive show. And like, also more importantly, I think that like this show is done really well when it's performed on Broadway or by directors that are like super intentional about how they portray the show. But that is obviously not the majority of productions of this show.
Yeah.
So I think doing this would kind of eliminate that need for this to fall on the director for whether the show is done in good taste or not. I think that could just kind of like eliminate that issue in the first place and keep this really beautiful show with a lot of amazing music and funny plots and great dancing. That is also like a crowd pleaser and fan favorite, while also making it updated for not being fucking racist. And that's that on
yes,
that.
Yes, of course. That was awesome. I really liked that.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Well, should we tease next week? It's not very different.
A little bit.
A little bit. All right. Drum roll, please. Next week's category is We're Broke and Everything Sucks. Also in New York.
So kind of a New York part two, but this time a bit less
two.
A bit less optimistic about what it's like living in New York City.
Yeah, bad things happen.
Yeah, which is also a reality.
It is. It's true.
Both are true.
Next week's shows, one of them in particular, very realistic.
Yes. We'll let you guess.
We'll let you guess which one. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Rate, share, subscribe.
Review, debate, recreate.
Debate, recreate. Oh, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. We love you all.
Love you all. Bye.
Bye. Rate.